You're listening to the Cycling Podcast at the Vuelta a España in association with Rafa, celebrating the sport and producing the finest cycling clothing since 2004. Today we're in Alto de la Mora.
Hello, my name is Richard Moore. I'm with Fran Reyes.
Hello, Richard.
And we were played in there with some noise from the start of the stage today. The Alberto Contador every day gets a great reception. Huge crowds around the Trek Segafredo bus, but particularly big today. Lots of kids there as well. And he took a lot of time to stop and sign autographs and pose for pictures and stuff. So recorded some of that. We were expecting a show from him today. He gave us a bit of a show, ultimately paid for it, one could argue. But Fran, before we crack on with the tale of the etapa, which as a punishment you're going to be doing tonight, and I hope it's exhaustive, and I hope there's nothing left out of that.
You are abusing your power, you know that.
Describe the setting. I mean, we're standing here on a sort of balcony, looking out over a remarkable vista in Sierra Nevada, and it's a ski center. Obviously, the slopes, we can see the slopes. We can see the infrastructure for the skiing. Obviously, there's no snow at the moment. It's about 2,500 meters. It's incredibly high, and it is absolutely spectacular.
There are many reasons why I love living in Granada, and this is definitely one of them. The Sierra Nevada feels like a completely different place to reach and a completely different place to live when you are
Fran,
here.
You've gone into a sort of trance. I'm a bit worried.
Sorry. Maybe I get so emotional and so inspired. You know.
I can see you seeking for some poetry there to describe.
It's not poetry. It's just awe, you know.
It's awe. You used up all your poetry and your kilometer to zero on this stage, which I hope people have enjoyed. There's been getting good feedback on that. I mean, in summary, it's beautiful.
Exactly. It's just beautiful. Come here, see it, experience it, and you will get quite a better view of it, a better perception of it, that what I can tell you, actually.
Yeah, funny, because the climb itself isn't so beautiful. It's a big wide road, it's a sort of motorway climb, you know, the bits of it lower down are stunning, but the place itself, the setting up here and the views that you get are extraordinary.
You know, there are two ways to climb up to Sierra Nevada. From the crossroads at El Dornajo, which is the summit of the Azayanas climb. And one is this general road, which is awful for cycling because it's too wide, too exposed to the wind, and really feels long and boring. And then we had the Collado de las Sabinas, which is a different, more twisty, more narrow, full of trees road, even harder. But they couldn't use it today because some environmental authorities that didn't allow it.
Ah, your voice sounds... I hope your voice is going to survive. Is this a coincidence, or does it have something to do with the fact that you stayed at home in Granada last night and went out with friends?
It's not a coincidence. It has something to do with that because, I guess the ice on the drinks I had yesterday are taking its toll.
The ice. Right, Fran, without further ado, give us a tale of an eventful etapa, and we've got... Coming up tonight, lots of interviews. Ilna Zakarin, interesting interview with him. When I say interesting, I mean it's in combination of English and Russian. And we'll hear from Michael Woods, who rode very well again today. And we'll hear a little bit from Nicholas Roach as well in the final part on something a bit different. But crack on, Fran.
Interesting. You say that it was a eventful stage, you know. And when I was coming down from the finish line, I was thinking this stage has been such a disappointment for me.
Well, maybe that will come through in your tale of the etapa.
Yeah, the tale of the etapa is so long that I guess it was eventful. Yeah. Stage 15 of the Vuelta a España from Alcalá Real to La Olla de la Mora, which is the legally reachable ceiling of the Sierra Nevada. On the way, the riders had to go through the climbs of Azayanas and El Puche before heading up to La Olla. The breakaway really struggled to establish itself on the first half of the stage, which was more or less gentle with flat terrain. Every GC team was trying to send members up the road and to limit the amount of representation that its rivals had at the front. So that led to some negative racing. Finally, it was a meaningless breakaway of 8 riders to get away, out of which 3 survived past Azayanas, Stefan Rosetto from Cofidis, Nelson Oliveira from Movistar Team, and Sander Armé from Lotto Soudal, which was the first to reach the top of Azayanas and was awarded the combativity prize after the stage. The climb to Garcierra was really thrilling in the bunch. The peloton was frantically fighting for position as they knew that this descent down to Huéjar and the bottom of the climb to Azayanas, which was sharp and fast and quite technical, could create some gaps. Yet the descent happened, the Azayanas climb began, and we saw no move from GC favorites. Peter Stettina was the first to lead the fireworks and was overtaken by Romain Bardet from IG Tour and Adam Yates from Morica Scott, who were later joined by Steven Kreisbeck from Noro L and Jumbo. Those three, along with Rosetto, Oliveira and Armé, reached the summit with over 3 minutes of advantage on a rather big bunch of 50-odd riders that climbed Azayanas 4 minutes slower than Chris Horner back in 2013, which gives us an idea of how little aggression there was in the group. On the descent from Azayanas to Monachil, the pace was increased by Astana, who set an high tempo in order to bridge the gap and help the options of Miguel Angel Lopez of getting a stage win. So the gap went down to 1 minute 30 seconds at the bottom of El Purche. It was on the beginning of this climb that Adam Yates rode off the rest of his recreate companions and began a solo climb that was almost successful on getting him a stage victory. Meanwhile, on the peloton, Alberto Contador launched an attack midway through the climb of El Purche, which was echoed by Miguel Ángel López, the Colombian climber from Astana. The duo cooperated and built a gap that exceeded a minute on the group of favorites, which was led by Team Sky. Said group was losing riders steadily as the kilometers went by, with top 15 cyclists such as Nicolas Roche from BMC and David de la Cruz from Quickstep being quickly dropped and consequently losing a big chunk of time on the finish line. The race went past El Purche and tackled the climb to La Hoya de la Mora via the awful general road of Sierra Nevada. Headwind appeared and took its toll, rendering more and more difficult for any attack to prosper, as Vincenzo Nibali from Bahrain Merida could confirm when he accelerated with 13 kilometers to go to be quickly brought back to the Sky Group. With 6 kilometers to go, Superman Lopez took off. He dropped Contador and flew all the way to catch and surpass Adam Yates too, thus netting his second mountaintop stage finish on this Vuelta. Meanwhile, the GC group, Ino Zakarin, accelerated with a couple of kilometers to go to gain a few seconds on his rivals and be seconds at the finish line, with Kelderman crossing it in third position and Froome in fifth. Contador dramatically blew on the last kilometer and lost 40 seconds to Chris Froome, who keeps the leadership of the overall classification with 1 minute on Vincenzo Nibali and roughly 2 on Ino Zakarin and Wilco Kelderman from Sunweb Giant. Chris Froome is the new leader as well of the point classification with a 3-point advantage on the Matteo Trentin, while Davide Mielella keeps the mountain jersey with Miguel Angel Lopez edging closer in second position. And finally, Astana Pro Team leads the team classification.
Hey, for a man who was not home yet at 5 o'clock in the morning, as a spy told me, that was very good, Fran. Very good.
Yeah.
Very detailed. I mean, Vilela, the King of the Mountains, interesting. I was waiting at the finish for Conor Dunn, who made it. But Vilela was in the gruppetto. You know, I don't know how, I'm not sure what the mathematics are that have kept him in the King of the Mountains jersey, but he's doing something right, obviously, because he's not really a natural climber. I mean, interesting on the overall, because Nibali is still second. Froome's advantage went out, despite him not really having to do anything from an aggressive point of view. He rode a defensive race today. The guy, you know, Nibali put in a dig. Nibali had a go, and he paid for it, just as Esteban Chavez yesterday put in a dig on the final climb, and he paid for it. Today, Chavez rode a more conservative race and didn't lose out. And so, you know, the rewards of the risk and reward of attacking, it doesn't look good for those guys who are, you know, in those top places. The only guy who did benefit today is Ilnur Zakarin, who I don't think we really mentioned last night, but is a bit of a sleeper. He's sneaking up there, and he leapfrogged Wilco Kelderman, who also rode extremely well today. I mean, Nibali was the guy that lost out a little bit today. Kelderman had another very good day, and there have been rumours that an illness is sweeping through that team, Team Sunweb. Two of their riders were a little bit ill yesterday and finished well down. I spoke to Mark Reef, their sports director, here at the finish afterwards, and he said that there isn't an illness. The two guys were a bit under the weather, but it wasn't a kind of virus thing, they don't think, and they're much better today. So they're not concerned that there is illness in the ranks. Wilco Kelderman still looks very, very good.
About the risk and reward of attacking, you know, I think that the success of an attack depends essentially on if tactical craft and of the strength of the rider. Of course, an attack such as the one that Alberto Contador did today was more or less okay from a tactical standpoint, because it surprised the peloton at a point when they didn't expect anyone to accelerate. But only Miguel Ángel López could succeed because he had the legs to do it. An attack like the one that Vincenzo Nibali did, with the peloton already having a high pace and a high tempo, was bound to fail. And Ilnur Zakarin, he was very smart today. He rode on the wheel of Team Sky until 1 kilometer to go or so, and then took off to get tiny but yet meaningful.
Yeah, and he's a good time trialist. He's a good time trialist. He's a guy who could well consolidate that podium place that he's in now. Well, let's hear from Ilnur Zakarin, shall we? You carried an interview with him at the finish.
A four-way interview.
I mean, we always have this conversation about Zakarin, because he does understand and speak English, but he doesn't like to in interviews. I interviewed him at the Giro, and he did speak English. He doesn't like to, so it's a bit of a combination here. We know that from his instant response in Russian to one of your questions. But who was it Swanier translating?
You know, the first and only time that I sat down with Ilnur Zakarin for an interview was on the Team Katusha training camp. I'm not quite sure if this was this winter or the previous one. And they set up Pavel Kulchetkov, teammate, roommate, as a translator for us. And he struggled quite a lot to translate the answers and questions from Russian to English. And it was only after the interview was done that I said something casually in Italian, and we realized that we could have had a pretty good translation from Italian to Russian had we realized earlier that we both spoke this language. But well, anyway, today what I saw on the I waited for Zakarin like half an hour on the doping control and on the door of anti-doping control, and when he came out he asked for the interview to be translated by his masseur, and so I had to do the interview with both Zakarin, his masseur, and also the Katusha press officer, the always helpful Philip Mertens, that was recording the conversation as we spoke. So yeah, it was an interesting situation.
Let's hear now then from Ilnur Zakarin.
Once again, you look like one of the best climbers of the race, at least the best among the GC contenders. How satisfied are you with your performance?
I feel good, and step by step. Я настраиваюсь на третью неделю, и, в принципе, на третью неделю у меня хорошая форма.
Я мотивируюсь for the third week,
and will be better. Right now you are sitting at the third position in the overall classification. Do you expect to keep this place after the time trial?
Я хотел бы, да, сохранить это место, и для будущего хотел бы до конца бороться за топ-3.
He will try to keep it this place until the end of World Espanya.
And one last question about today's stage. I had the impression that the Athayana's climb was very slow today. Why weren't more attacks to put pressure on Team Sky?
Ну, была потому что длинная гора, и она со встречным ветром, то есть не было смысла атаковать в последней горе уже в Северной воде. Если надо было атаковать, то только раньше. Ну, в принципе, каждый сделал все, что смог, я думаю.
Because today was long mountains, yeah, and also a bit front wind. Yeah. It was difficult to attack, and everybody did вот, possible for this situation, yeah.
Так, да, еще будет много гор, например, Ангелеру, где, я думаю, уже совсем все будет по-другому, нежели сейчас. Мы ехали сегодня с оглядкой на последнюю неделю.
Today everybody racing and looking for the next or last week, yeah. Because next week will be also good mountains, yeah, like Ангелеру, yeah. And it will be difficult racing. Difficult and not difficult, it's...
for attack, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Better
for attack.
Yeah.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thanks to Science and Sport for sponsoring the cycling podcast. CPAUG20, CPAUG20 will get you 20% off at scienceandsport.com. So go there for all your sports nutrition needs. We heard before the break your interview with Ilner Zakarin. So he's obviously feeling strong and feeling very confident about the third week. Yeah. So there are still threats for Froome. I mean, they didn't let him go, but they didn't react as they might have done had it been a Nibali or a Chavez. You know, he's not one of the guys who perhaps has been regarded as a really big threat, but in moving up to third now, he will be, and so he'll be kept on a much tighter leash. Mm-hmm. Chris Froome came into the press room at the finish, well after the finish. They're all off now to catch a flight up to the north of Spain. Yeah. I'm catching a flight home tomorrow.
I'm driving all the way to Logroño.
You're
because
driving?
The cycling podcast plane is busy with you, so.
Yeah, sure. Anyway, Chris Froome, as I mentioned, came in. A good day for him, a good couple of days for him. Here's what he had to say in the press centre afterwards.
Not necessarily surprised by Lopez and how strong he's been. He's been extremely consistent over the last few mountain stages, so I was expecting today that he would try again, especially with Astana pulling so much behind. It was clear the objective today of trying to win the stage with Lopez. And I'd say he's ridden a fantastic race. He's been very strong. From our side, we were more concentrated on obviously Vincenzo Nibali because he was second in GC. But if Lopez continues to take as much time as he does in the mountains, we're going to have to respond a bit faster to his attacks as well. But for now, we're just going to see how the GC is after the time trial. And then come up with a strategy for the last 5 days.
Chris, the climb to Atalaya seemed a bit slow with a rather big group making it to the top. Were you surprised by the lack of aggression of your rivals?
I think it's the end of a very hard block. It's the end of 2 days, extremely difficult yesterday and today. And to be honest, I think everybody who had energy spent it already. I think everyone was on the limit. Yeah, we saw some little gaps in the end, just with an acceleration 500 meters to go. Already there were some gaps in from the main GC group. Alberto Contador was dropped in the final. I think everyone gave everything they had today. I don't think anyone had much left.
Interesting point, that one by Chris Froome. For me, it was pretty disappointing to see the GC riders and GC teams not doing any meaningful move in the Athenians climb. Yet it's really true that this week of Vuelta has been pretty demanding for the riders, not only because of the course that has been hard with three proper mountain stages, but also because of the weather. How has it changed? That is quite hard for a cyclist's body.
Well, about the fatigue and as we said earlier about the whole risk and reward thing of attacking him, you know, Contador might have gone there, Nibali might have had to go there, but the problem is not so much Chris Froome but his team. I mean, we always have this debate about how much the team is a factor. Here in this particular situation, the team is hugely important because we can see that Froome still has one or two men at the finish, and what Froome can do is just use them up and use them to just not jump after attacks, but just set a steady tempo that makes, like today, it was agonizing watching Nibali sort of dangle off the front, putting in a huge effort that, as I say, he then paid for, and have Wout Poels just gradually reel him in, because, you know, Nibali's making a big effort to get the gap, and then you pay for that. Wout Poels is just winding up more gradually, and there's less of a cost to that.
Especially in a steady climb, such as the general road of Sierra Nevada, and with headwinds.
This climb today was absolutely made for Chris Froome and for the way that Team Sky ride.
It was a team Sky climb. I mean, it was a perfect contest.
Whereas the Angleroo towards the end of next week, maybe a different proposition.
Quite different, quite different proposition, quite different scenario. So I am afraid that the real interesting stages to try and unsettle Froome and Team Sky are already behind us. Maybe the stage to Gijón in the last week can be a tricky one, but I don't see many scenarios on which Chris Froome could lose the advantage he holds now, and the advantage, and especially the advantage he's going to hold after the time trial in Logroño next Tuesday.
Yeah, well, before we hear from another of the GC guys who I spoke to at the finish, just a little word on Superman, you know, who went close yesterday, got his stage win today, and Adam Yates as well, who put in a very good effort. We suspected that both Yates brothers had been sitting up. They certainly lost a lot of time yesterday, and you know, with a view to going for stage wins, which is the strategy of other riders like Romain Bardet. And it almost came off for Adam Yates. He rode extremely well. I mean, a long part of that climb, he was holding off Bardet, Lopez, and Contador, and Kruijswijk. That's a good, powerful group working hard to chase him, and he was holding the gap at a minute. So he was riding extremely, extremely well. But when Lopez caught him, he made a big effort to stay with him initially, and I think that was psychology as much as anything. Yeah. You know, just position himself on Lopez's wheel, see if that could, you know, unsettle him. But when he blew up, you could hear the explosion throughout the valley, I would think, all the way down to Granada.
Yeah, you know, it was a hell of a ride by Adam Yates. I think it was an impressive performance, and one he can really be proud of. He clearly was kind of reliving all his trainings during the month of July here in Sierra Nevada, Granada, and surroundings. And as for Superman Lopez, this was his type of climb. I was speaking on the finish line to Vicente Velda, son to Vicente, Maser to Miguel Angel Lopez. And he told me that these kind of long, steady efforts are perfect, ideal for Miguel Angel, which in turn kind of struggle on the uphill sharper ones. You know, that's why he lost so much time in the first week on all these uphill finishes that were in
there. People wondering where he lost time. I mean, he's moved above Fabio Aru today overall, so he's perhaps too far down to be a real threat, but again, he's somebody who is going to have to be watched quite closely. There's quite a few riders who appear to be coming into decent form and could be a threat in these different types of climbs in the final week. I mentioned that I spoke to Michael Woods from Cannondale Drapac. Quite a difficult day on Saturday, but a much stronger day on Sunday. And in fact, he was sixth on the stage, you know, just behind Chris Froome and just ahead of Vincenzo Nibali. So he rode extremely well. It's really he's an eighth overall, still in his second Grand Tour. His first was the Giro earlier this year. So really very, very impressive from him. Here's what he had to say at the finish. It was obviously a huge, huge effort. Another huge stage, two back-to-back stages, and you're still there. What have you learned from these two stages?
Yesterday I had a bit of a weak moment mentally. That cost me big time in terms of time. I think I could have made that front group with Zacharin and Kelderman yesterday. So I was really disappointed in myself. But a good conversation with Juan Manuel Grate, my director, he told me, man, you can't put pressure on yourself on the GC. You just have to enjoy racing and enjoy being here. Pinch yourself every once in a while and tell yourself, like, man, like, it's good to be here. And that's what I did. I'll climb today. Just kind of broke it down kilometer by kilometer, and every so often tried to just remind myself that I'm here to have fun and race. And mentally I was so much better and managed to stick that front group, so I'm pretty happy.
And that is a monster climb today. It seems like at the finish here everybody's absolutely exhausted. I mean, everybody was on their limit there, I think, weren't they?
Yeah, it's monster climb on the back of a big day yesterday. Everyone's going to be enjoying that rest day tomorrow.
Listen to Kilometer Zero, our morning show at the Vuelta a España, by becoming a friend of the Cycling Podcast at thecyclingpodcast.com.
They are not Giro of Italy, they are not Tour de France, they are Vuelta a España.
I like it because, one, I think it's always been the race where my form peaked in August, and it's the perfect race to suit my condition.
Well, year by year we try to do something new.
On the mountains they are screaming until the last guy.
Also the hotels are very good. The best hotels of the three Grand Tours.
It's just more relaxed. It's beautiful weather-wise.
I like the food. I know perfectly what I have to order, in which area, which is the typical food, the wine.
And from a rider's, you know, there's so much opportunity, so many breakaways go to the finish. It's good for the young riders.
The Rafa Cycling Club is the largest global community of its kind. Members share their passion for the road through rides, events, exclusive club kit and racing. Find out more at rafa.cc.
What are you laughing at, Fran?
Nothing, just thinking of how it would be if I reported my night out, if I did a tale of the night for the listeners.
I'm not sure we're ready for that.
No.
Well, before the break we heard from Michael Woods, and then we heard a little trailer for Monday's rest day. That's a rest day, isn't it? Monday's Kilometer Zero, episode number 7 of the 9 that we're producing here at the Vuelta. I know Lionel's got a couple of crackers for later in week 3, but Viva la Vuelta is the title of episode 7. It includes an interview with Javier Guillen. We hear from a lot of riders, including the likes of Adam Hansen, and too many that I can actually remember at the moment, telling us what they think about the Vuelta, why they like it, why they don't like it. We hear a bit about Javier Guillen's plans to take the Vuelta outside Spain again for starts, perhaps even to Yorkshire. That's been rumoured for a while.
Gary Verity was in Nîmes.
Gary Verity was in Nîmes, and Javier Guillen says he knows him very, very well. Who doesn't? lots of interesting stuff from him about, you know, his not so much concern, but a little bit of anxiety. The retirement of Contador takes away a big attraction. Obviously, Alejandro Valverde is on his last legs, you would have thought. He's not got too many more Vueltas in him. Samuel Sanchez, another one of that generation, is not here because of a failed drugs test before the Vuelta started. So who's coming up to replace those guys? I mean, he said that he's a lot more optimistic now than he was a couple of years ago with the likes of David de la Cruz, Enric Mas, Mikel Landa. You know, there are perhaps replacements in the wings, and they seem to have appeared quite quickly. So he's not so worried about that, but he said a lot of interesting things. I think you did a couple of interviews for this episode as well, Fran?
Yeah, with Kiko García, technical director of the Vuelta. And I'm going to do another interview for this special. Richard Moore, journalist for the Cycling Podcast. What do you like about the Vuelta?
What do I like about the Vuelta? I like the relaxed feel of it, which is what a lot of the riders said. It does feel very relaxed. It feels slightly more relaxed than the Giro and a lot more relaxed than the Tour. You know, the riders are generally, it's interesting, I think contracts have got quite a lot to do with that. You know, at the Giro, there's still a lot of riders who are not really sure what they're going to be doing the following year, and they are riding for their futures at the Tour. If you're riding the Tour, chances are you're going to be okay the following year. Whereas at the Vuelta, it's a last chance saloon for some guys. Mm. And so there's pressure on those guys to perform, and yet the race does feel very, very relaxed. What I don't like about it are the transfers.
Yeah, transfers.
We've been driving a long, long way. Also, I mean, this Vuelta in particular, there have been lots and lots of stories, not necessarily all good stories, you know, from Sanchez to Cannondale Drapac and their uncertain future.
Maxim Belkov being pushed off the bike.
Yeah, there's been there have been really good talking points every day, really, and that keeps it interesting, doesn't it? So it's been very enjoyable. I'm preparing to bow out, Fran. So
what I'm gonna do without you, man?
We'll say our goodbyes at the end of the episode. Don't, you know? Yeah. Let's save that for
okay
now.
I will save my
emotion.
No, man.
You got some poetry for
no, I forgot. I'm
this night out is taking its toll.
This is going to be edited out. I was trying to find the word lágrimas, lacrime,
tears.
I will hold my tears until the end of the episode then.
Yeah, do that, please. I don't want you to get any tears on the microphones. They're very sensitive to the water. Now listen, Fran, at the start this morning, it's slightly bad timing this, but I've been wanting to speak to him about this for a while, Nicholas Roach, because he was, I can't remember if he was 12th or 13th at the start of the day, but the two BMC GC riders, TJ Van Garderen and Nicholas Roach, were 12th and 13th. Van Garderen had not such a bad day today. Nicholas Roach didn't have a good day today. He lost 16 minutes, but he maintained this morning when I spoke to him that riding for GC is what he wants to do, and it's not about, he said, World Tour points, etc., which some of us suspect of riders who try to sort of sneak into the top 15, top 20, or top 10. It's about the way that he wants to ride the race, to feel that he's giving his best every day. I asked him a little bit about that. Here he is at the start this morning, Nicholas Roach.
You know, at this point in the race, it's not worth one day completely sitting up, and because there's only very few chances left, you know. A week ago, it was time to make that decision. I wanted to give her a proper chance, knowing that this week was always going to be too hard for me. Those climbs are just too brutal, you know. Normally in the Vuelta, the climbs are shorter, steeper, more like the first week, and then you get one or two of those 15K climbs, where this year there's five or six of them. So it changes a lot the GC perspective, but like I said before the Vuelta, I was in probably one of the best conditions I had in years, and I wanted to give a proper shot, but the reality is against those 60 kilo climbers, I have no chance.
Is there a dilemma in terms of how you race it, whether you do try for overall or, as you say, set up and maybe try for a stage? No guarantee that you can't. You will win a stage, of course, but is that a dilemma, and what comes into that decision? Is it World Tour points for, you know, finishing 10th, 11th, that kind of thing as well?
No, well, not for me, you know, because at the end of the day, if you win a stage, it's more points than, I think, top 15, so it's very similar. At the moment, I'm in kind of that situation where there are points, but there aren't many points. You know, if you go for stages, there's also quite a lot of points now for stages. But I definitely don't ride for points. That's that hasn't even been talked about during the Vuelta. It was about giving me a chance to ride GC. And I think, you know, I rode aggressively some days on the attack, some others. And it's all about now going to Madrid and fighting day by day. I think that was the initial plan when I talked with the coach and the management. It was like, all right, this Vuelta, we just take it day by day and just kind of hang in there and just go forward.
I mean, it goes against every instinct of a bike racer as well to sort of sit up one day and lose time. I guess the way you want to ride is to give your best every day. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, totally. Totally fair, yeah. But on the other hand, sometimes to win a stage is kind of the only way to do it. You know, I've had a couple of top 10s already here in the Vuelta, so I was, I think, 10 days in the top 3 on GC, so whatever happens, it's not going to be a bad Vuelta. But obviously, you know, it would have been amazing to get a stage win, but, you know, Madrid is still 6 days away.
So that was Nicholas Roach. I mean, it is an interesting one, isn't it? We talked earlier about Adam Yates and deliberately losing time. Romain Bardet, obviously. Warren Barguil at the Tour de France did the same thing. Lost time, won stages. Winning stages isn't easy. It's not, you know, if Nicholas Roach was to sit up a couple of days and lose a lot of time, there's absolutely zero guarantee that he could win a stage. But he's a punchy rider. He's a powerful rider. He's got a good finish. You know, he used to be up there in bunch sprints. And he is somebody who you always think could perhaps you know, take that different approach, but it doesn't seem to be in his nature. I mean, I was asking about World Tour points. You know, to win a stage at the Vuelta, you win 100 World Tour points. Okay, that is equivalent to finishing 12th overall. And I guess the question is, would you rather finish 12th overall or win a stage of the Vuelta?
I guess it depends on the rider. I mean, we had an example yesterday or the day before with Louis Meinkins, another guy who just prefers to be racing on this suffering mode of struggling every day to finish off as high as possible on the GC, whereas most riders do prefer to get that day of glory, you know, that beautiful photo of them raising their arms at the finish line. To be honest, I respect Roach's and Meinkins' mindset, but I wouldn't go for that. I wouldn't go for that. I mean, especially when I have already explored my limits as a GC contender, why struggle again just to get less than remarkable result?
We also see, we saw at the Tour with Barguil, we see it here with Contador, how you know, riding in an attacking, aggressive way, it makes you very popular with the fans. Mm-hmm. The fans love it. You know, that's what we want from bike racing. And
teams do love it too, and sponsors them secretly.
Well, yeah, so there are other ways to add to your value than just World Tour points. But I guess a lot of the time it maybe does come down to that. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, in a way, it's a shame that maybe Roach, having lost like 16 minutes a day, will take a slightly different approach now. Who knows? We'll see. But anyway, I thought it was interesting to ask him a little bit about that. So Fran, anything else to say about today's stage before we pack up and head down to Granada for what you've told me is going to be a delicious meal?
Yeah, Tocateja, you are going to get the best huevos rotos in Granada. But before you start salivating, I want to make a couple of local notes. One is about Rubén Fernández, rider from Movistar team, who pulled out today from the race. He has been struggling during this whole Vuelta with injuries, you know, small injuries that are probably the kind of problems he wouldn't even notice if he was in a positive frame of mind. And today he struggled to make it to the top of Azayanas, and afterwards just decided to pull out completely and finish with a season that has pretty much been a nightmare for him since his crash in the winter that broke his jaw in various pieces, you know, in he hasn't been able to quite come back from that. He was taken out of the Tour de France team on the last minute, and that really harmed his morale. Hopefully he will come back in better shape next year. Another guy who has suffered a nightmare season has been Javi Moreno, the Bahrain rider. He was
disqualified from the Giro.
He rode a pretty anonymous Tour de France, and in this Vuelta a España he crashed again. He was telling me today as he came to visit his team and to collect his back that was still within the team car since the stage 4 in
he left an ambulance, didn't he?
Yeah, he left in the ambulance and he hadn't collected his personal effects yet, and he told me that he didn't break his helmet, he didn't break his jersey, that all the impact of the crash went straight to the knees and the jaw, you know, and subsequently he lost 9 teeth. Right now he can't open his mouth, you know, it's all of it is attached and strained, so he can't open it, and he has to feed himself with a straw. With a straw through the holes that are left by the teeth he lost. He's going to be feeding like that until September 11th.
Wow. Well, if he wants motivation or a positive role model, he need look no further than today's stage winner, Miguel Ángel López, who at the Vuelta last year crashed out, lost 6 teeth, I think.
Yeah, when he crashed out. That's true.
I think he carried on for a few days, actually. Did he not?
The next day,
he started, and I'm not sure if that was on medical advice or not, but he didn't, that was the end of his season, basically. And then over the winter, he was hit by a car, wasn't he, training, and he broke his tibia. Yeah. So he had, and we probably haven't made enough of that, the fact that he's come back at this level from these two terrible setbacks, and is obviously he's the Lopez that we saw at the Tour of Switzerland last year, and who we thought was going to ride extremely well at the Vuelta. And you know, here he is, basically 23 years old still, but starting to deliver on his enormous promise.
Yeah, but I always look at the bright side of life. Thanks to these setbacks, he is fresh on this Vuelta.
Always look on the bright side of life. Well, Fran, listen, I'm flying out tomorrow. I'm flying home. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much for, you know, helping us through the Vuelta and adding all your local knowledge to our coverage. I think it's been great and people have been enjoying it, so thank you.
Thank you, Richard, for having me on, and have a safe trip home.
Thank you, and look after Lionel.
Yeah, I will look after him, and we will feed him properly.
Feed him properly. I mean, that's pretty much what I mean by look after Lionel. I mean, if he gets regular food, meal times and snacks, he's generally happy. So you just keep him well fed, and the next week will be very, very enjoyable. And Lionel will be back. Many of you will be reassured to hear to take up the reins again of Tale of the Etapa, unless he gets you to do it as a punishment again one night. But he'll be doing that every night. It'll be back to its usual kind of authoritative, detailed, all the facts that you need will be there in a Lionel manner. So anyway, I'll be listening at home. I'm looking forward to that.
Great.
In the meantime, bon voyage, Fran.
Bon voyage, Richard. Ricardo.